Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to
Fun Mad About It.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermentable.
Archived on Stitcher and iTunes, and also right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
So, happy Monday.
Happy Monday, if you say so.
All right, so we have a couple of announcements this week. First off is we're very excited. Chris and I are heading to the American Homebrewers Association National Homebrewers Conference in Grand Rapids, Michigan on June 12th through 14th. So actually register online. They actually have tickets still available. Online registration closed on May 31st, but they will be taking registration on site beginning, I believe, on June 10th in Grand Rapids. So we're excited about that. We're going to hook up with a bunch of homebrewers and have some interviews for you guys.
And we just finished doing our contraption for the New York City Homebrewers Guild and Brunity. So we'll have a couple different clubs from New York City represented on Club Night, which is that Friday. And that is kind of the highlight of the entire thing. It's basically a giant beer festival, but with homebrew clubs at the booths instead of pros.
Yep. They have a ton of seminars. I think the most seminars they've ever had at a conference. I'm really excited about a bunch of those, as well as just, you know, seeing old friends, making new ones, and having a really good time and, you know, getting the pulse on the homebrew nation, I guess, as it is. One other thing is on Saturday, June 21st, well, first of all, I think we've mentioned this before, but Jimmy Carbone of Beer Sessions Radio here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, as well as owner of Jimmy's Number 43 in the East Village, is hosting a Ciderwick Summer Solstice Cider Fest, June 20th through the 23rd. And I wanted to bring one event to your attention, as it is a homebrewing hard cider kind of event. So Andy Brennan of Aaron Burr, which is an absolutely amazing Hudson Valley cidery, he's really doing some incredible ciders, one of my favorite cider makers right now, is hosting a homebrew hard cider tasting and competition at Jimmy's at 6 p.m. on Saturday, June 21st. So it's $20 at the bar, or free if you bring a growler of your homebrewed cider to share a sample. I'm sure if you don't have a growler, you can bring, you know, several bottles that are somewhat the equivalent. I plan to be there. I'm going to bring some of the ciders I've been fermenting, and I hope to see some of you there.
I'd love to, but I'll be doing a seminar on session beers at the New York City Craft Beer Festival.
Yep, and where's that?
That is at the Armory, and I guess you find that. Information on that, was it nycbeerfestival.com?
Yeah, we'll put that out on Twitter. We'll put all these links out on Twitter for you guys to make it easier. So what do we have tonight, Chris?
Today is yesterday, which is the day before yesterday. We pre-taped interview on Saturday. We went out to Long Island to visit our friend Jaren David, who's a really dear friend, does a website and photography and all sorts of stuff.
He's the one that takes all the awesome photos that are on our website and we put out on Facebook and everything.
All the pictures of you are awesome, Mary. We have faces for radio, so never mind about that.
So anyway, we were at out in Port Jefferson, Long Island, visiting Jaren this weekend, and we finally made it to Port Jeff Brewing Company. Our friend Mike Philbrick is owner of the Port Jeff Brewing Company. It's super cute little tasting room. They're doing a bunch of really great beers there, so we got to check out the brewery and talk to Mike. So that's what we have for you today.
Enjoy. Fun Mad About It.
All right, we're here in Port Jefferson, New York, with Mike Philbrick, owner of Port Jeff Brewing Company. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So this is our first time out here. We've been drinking your beers for a while.
Today,
yeah. We're on number 4 of a 10 taster.
11, I believe. 11.
I think there's 11 on today, yeah.
So how long has Port Jeff Brewing Company been here?
We opened in October of 2011, so we're just approaching our third year, I guess, so 2.5 years, almost 3.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How big of a brewery are you?
Well, it's only about 1,000 square feet, but we brew 7 barrels at a time. We have 14 barrel fermenters, 4 14 barrel fermenters, and 2 7 barrel fermenters, so most of the time we're double batching. We'll probably put out a little over 1,200 barrels this year, 1,200 to 1,400 barrels if things keep moving the way they move. So.
Cool. And you do draft, and then you do select bottles.
We do mostly draft, and then we have 4 mainstays in a bottle, the Schooner Pale Ale, the Belgian Triple, which is called the H3, our Porter, and the Starboard Oatmeal Stout are all in 22-ounce bottles year-round. And then we do select stuff in bottles here and there as well.
Do you have a barrel-aged?
We do have barrels that we keep, and so we put certain stuff in that. We recently just emptied some of the barrels with porter in them, so that's what the bottles, the wax cap bottles are right now, are 750s of barrel-aged porter.
Awesome. So we are drinking this Waterfront Wheat.
Yeah,
so
the Waterfront Wheat.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Waterfront Wheat is good. It's a... It's
delicious.
Yeah, we like it. It's a new beer for us. This is actually the first batch that we brewed is what you're drinking. We're about to brew the second batch Monday. It's a beer that we make for a restaurant called Salt in Shelter Island. They came to us. We had sold a lot of beer with them last year, and they came to us over the winter in their off season and said, "Hey, could we do a beer just for the restaurant?" And we said yes and kind of collaborated on some stuff that they liked and we liked and threw this little beer together, which is basically a wheat beer with a Belgian wit yeast and grains of paradise and lemongrass. And it's incredibly drinkable. It's only 5.2% alcohol. It's perfect for to kind of match their fare out there. They do a lot of seafoods and oysters and things like that, and so it's a perfect accompaniment to what they're doing out there.
It's a really bright beer, and the bitterness of the pepper and the brightness of the lemongrass is really awesome. When do you use it in your brewing process?
The lemongrass goes in real late, as do the grains of paradise. So, really almost at flame out.
Okay.
And, you know, for us, flame out for us, you know, differing from a homebrew setup, when our flame goes out, there's still an hour to an hour and a half, at least, of beer being warm in the kettle. And
right.
So it gets a chance to steep in there.
Right.
The reason that is because we whirlpool for 20 minutes, and then, you know, by the time all the beer, it takes about 45 minutes to knock out or chill the beer to get it to the fermenter. So, and during that process, the kettle's still almost 200 degrees, if not over a little.
How did you guys decide how much lemongrass that you wanted to put in? Did you do some test batches or?
We didn't test it at all. Matt, our head brewer, kind of came up with the recipe and just swung the bat and hit the ball, and alas, we have that beer. So
I think it's perfect.
It worked out, yeah. So, you know, as with any beer, normally we'll brew the first batch. We'll kind of adjudicate it based on flavor and what we were aiming for and then tweak little things. This is not one that we're going to really tweak anything on. So we're pretty happy with the way that it came out. So
you said you're primarily known for the Schooner Pale and the Porter, primarily,
right?
Actually, so what is that? Has your Porter recipe changed since the beginning, or
no?
Your first recipes.
The Porter recipe. The only thing we changed in the Porter was where we put the honey, but we still put some honey in it. But it's essentially the same thing I was doing in my basement, you know, for the past 10 years or so.
How long have you been brewing?
I got my first brew kit in 2000, so Christmas of 2000, and I started home brewing. At that time, you really didn't have the internet, and you didn't have all the kind of resources that we have today. So I brewed probably 5 to 10 really bad batches of beer, and then I went on hiatus for a little bit and brewed here and there with friends, but I got more into it probably around 2004, five or six when I had my first kid, and I found myself at home a lot more. I started brewing a lot more, and then and really that's where I was got into all grain and started working recipes kind of a little bit more than a hobby, I guess you could say.
Obviously now.
Right, yeah.
What were you doing professionally before?
I was a sales manager for a window company.
Okay.
It was my latest gig right before this. So I worked for a company called Marvin Windows, which sells insanely expensive but incredibly nice windows.
Nice and melodic. Like, yeah. Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Marvin Gaye windows.
Sexy windows.
So, yeah, I was selling very high-end windows, or I had a sales force that did that. And there's not very many parallels to the brewing industry.
But you are from this area, born and raised?
I'm actually from Newtown, Connecticut. Okay. And my wife is from this area, from Stony Brook, which is the next town over. And once we were about to have our second child, we moved back to this area. We were living down by Philadelphia. I was actually right by Sly Fox and Victory, yeah, and Iron Hill and a ton of other breweries down there. And so when we moved back here, there was really a lack of breweries here, which was part of the reason that kind of pushed me into starting a brewery here, because I was like, Port Jeff's a gorgeous town. It's ridiculous that there's no brewery.
Yeah, it's awesome to be right here on the water, looking out at the boats.
And yeah, it's really a perfect setting. So, you know, and then I kind of, around that same time I started doing that, there was a bunch of other people with kind of the same ideas, but throughout the island. Now there seems to be like 14 or 15 of us on the island, which is cool.
Yep.
And yeah, so that's kind of how we got here.
I want to go back to the porter.
Yes.
So why honey in the porter?
I don't know. I don't know why I started adding honey to the porter in the first place. What I can tell you is that when I did, it tasted very good. and I used to add it into the boil. And one of those like home brewer mess up type of things, I forgot to add it, and so I decided to add it into the fermenter instead. Honey's relatively clean and aseptic, I guess you would call it. So we continued that practice here for a while, and we recently changed back to putting it in the boil again, just really so we didn't have to open the fermenters.
Yeah.
And there wasn't much of a difference between the two things, but it seems like every beer, not every beer, but many of the beers that we do here have some sort of little quirk, which is generally a homebrew mistake that ended up being cool. You know, like we dry hop a beer because we forgot to add the hops when I was a homebrewer, like just little things like that, little quirks. But that was one of them, which really wasn't necessary, and so we kind of went back to the...
But when you say you're putting it into... You said boil a moment ago, but do you mean at the whirlpool? Or like,
yeah, we put it right at the end.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because one of the issues, I think, that I... One of the reasons I liked it in the fermenter was there was no scorching or caramelization of the honey.
Right.
And so you got a lot more of the actual natural honey flavor when you put it in the fermenter.
Mm-hmm.
It really goops up your fermenter pretty good, though, because half of the honey falls to the bottom and creates like a sugar layer, which the cellar guys don't like to clean the fermenters after that. But it's, there's really not a huge difference of doing that versus doing it at flame out. So
I think honey's a flavor that a lot of homebrewers would like, you know, have an experimented with, or maybe have started to, and I think it's a really great ingredient to,
yeah, it's
for
good
people to play with.
And you know, I guess, what's the formal word for someone who makes mead?
A mead maker.
Maker would probably tell you the difference, and I've noticed the difference, like especially with the porter. If we use wildflower honey, and we use the same wildflower honey from the same place every time, because there is a vast difference between using, like, for instance, clover honey or orange blossom or even a different type of wild honey, you know, from a different area or different, now I don't know that word either,
but
different apiary. Yes. It was on the tip of my tongue.
Yes.
So, it's cool to use home brewing because, you know, you do get different flavors. So you can use honey in a couple different beers. If you use a couple different types of honey, you get a whole different outcome. So that would be a good experiment. Same beer, three different honeys.
Is this the same source of honey that you had as a home brewer then?
No, it isn't. I used to use the little bear that you would get at Stop and Shop.
Yeah.
And then I changed that. I actually started using... Well, that's how I met John Kinsella, who is...
Yeah,
so John Kinsella was doing a farmer's market here in Port Jefferson, and I started buying honey from him to use in the beer. And he asked me one day, he's like, dude, why are you coming down here and buying, like, you're buying, you know, five jars of honey every week. You can't possibly be eating this. And I told him, and then he told me around that time, too, that he was interested in starting hop farming. So that was probably 4 or 5 years ago now. And then we've been good friends since. As it turns out, we have the same birthday, a lot of the same interests. He actually comes and helps out here every once in a while and brews with us, and of course grows hops that we use in some of our beers. Actually, the Waterfront Wheat, we use some of his Cascade hops. So yeah, so that's a very, I don't know, one of those stories that wraps around and wraps
around.
We had
him on the show when he was doing his Kickstarter for the hop harvesting.
Oh, right, yep.
And I'm so glad he made it and that thing was working out.
Yeah.
You've seen a lot of growth since you started in 2011. Did you start with this entire system in 2011?
No, we started with fermenters 1, 2, 5, and 6. So we started with 2 14s and 2 7s, and we put the 2 additional 14s in 2012. And we're actually looking to replace 5 and 6 with 2 more 14s and then add another 14 still into here. So I know it's looking at the place like, well, where are you going to be putting that? So if we move, we're going to get rid of 5 and 6, the 7 barrels, because we could put 14s in those places.
Right.
And then obviously double the amount that we're getting from that space. And so with any luck, we'll do that probably by the end of the summer.
And then also, you don't have a bottling line here, so are you hand bottling everything?
Oh, no, we do have 2 bottling units. Okay. We bring them in as we bottle. Okay. So we have 1 bottling unit is actually a wine filler. It's something that a winery would use. We use that for our bottle conditioning because you can't put carbonated product through it. It just foams too much and it doesn't work. So we use that for anything that we bottle condition. And then we've built a Frankenstein counter pressure bottle filler, which is it works actually rather well. We're able to do about 100 cases per day on it, so of 22s, so it works pretty quickly. It actually hangs on that door over there, which the listeners at home can't see, but just picture a door with hangers on it that a bottling device hangs from. So we use that. It's when you see the whole bottling rig set up, it's kind of funny because it's definitely like little inventions that we've made, but it works rather well. Some folks that work on regular bottling lines say, hey, man, this is it's ridiculous how you guys have made this stuff, but and it works as well as it does. Like I said, doing 100 cases a day with this stuff completely sanitary is pretty cool. So we'll have to show you. When you come back, we'll bottle some.
Definitely. Oh, I look fantastic. I love
we still use the homebrew hand capper, too. So
I only want to come if I can clean some kegs.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing to do, really.
We can do that, too. Yeah, we can do that today.
Fantastic.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit greatbrewers.com today.
So tell us a little bit about your barrel aging program.
The barrel aging program has been a little tricky this year because barrels are hard to come by. So
that's what we've heard.
Yeah, I have a good source that I'll keep secret that I get Heaven Hill whiskey barrels from. And so that's predominantly what we use in our barrel aging program. We've used some Jack Daniel's whiskey barrels as well. We're getting our hands on a couple rum barrels in the next couple weeks, and we're looking to get some wine barrels. So we've started to do some sour beers, which have been popping up here and there. We have a sour base beer that we essentially blend things into. And the ultimate goal is to start doing some of those blends and putting them into wine barrels. We have a sour stout that is kind of chirping away on a bunch of Brett and some other things that we ultimately have in. Some of it's in whiskey barrels right now, but we're going to put some of that in wine barrels too. It really depends on the beer that we use, but generally speaking, porter is the main beer that we use in the barrel aging program. That goes into a Heaven Hill whiskey barrel. We generally condition the barrels a little bit. We can get a couple fills out of them, so they're not always fresh barrels, but when we do that, we'll blend the barrels together. So in other words, we might have a barrel that's brand new, you know, it had whiskey in it prior to having the beer. We'll fill that one. We may have a second barrel that had beer in it, and we'll fill that one, and then we'll blend those two together to get the desired taste, so to speak. And then it's really up to the barrel how long it takes. We've done anything from like 30 days to 6 months. We try to raise and lower the temperature in our barrel room very erratically to allow that wood to kind of expand and contract and throw flavors into the barrel. So
I was going to ask about your blending process. You're then taking it from the barrel and putting it into the bright tank all together?
Yeah, that's usually what we'll do. So we put nails in the barrels, in the ends of the barrels, so you can simply pull the nail out to sample what's inside and then replace the nail. When we do that, there's a panel of us, usually three or four of us, and we talk about the beer, okay, which barrels, you know, barrel 1A is nice and hot and, you know, probably a little too hot, but barrel C is, you know, a little subdued and not as much whiskey, and so that's kind of where we make the decisions on what we're going to blend, and that normally goes into the bright tank. Usually we don't use virgin beer, but we've done it before, where we'll use some, you know, porter that just came out. And then depending on oxidization, we'll croizen it in the bright tank too, which is a trick that I learned from a friend of mine that went to UC Davis, but essentially we throw just a little bit of yeast and a little bit of sugar into the beer, and that eats up the oxygen that's ultimately in the beer and kind of converts that off flavor a little bit. You can't get rid of it fully, but you can kind of mend it a little bit. So there's a lot of oxygen in the barrels because they're wood and porous.
That's a fantastic trick, actually.
Yeah, it's good. When I was complaining, the second run we ever did, I was complaining to my buddy who used to work out at Maui, Maui Brewing. He was their QC director, and he's like, hey, try this. And we did it, and I was amazed at how much it masks the oxidization, because it's eating the oxygen that's in the beer.
So
it's basically correcting.
Yeah, it corrects it, and it only takes like a day or so. You just let it go, let it do its thing. You're not putting enough in there to, you know, it's almost like
you're kind of scrubbing the beer. Maybe.
You're scrubbing the beer, and it's almost like you're sponding it, because you want to vent it a little bit so you don't implode your fermenter or your bright tank, but you can also get a little carbonation out of it too, a little bit of a head start. So
I could do that as a home brewer just by siphoning it out of the barrel back into a carboy.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent idea as a home brewer, because I get a lot of, I actually just tried a couple last night that were, home brewed barrel aged beers, and they were excellent. The only side effect, or the only off flavor that I was really picking up, was oxidization. You know, where it takes, you almost get like extra woody type of flavor to it. And so that's that croizening of it would really help it, I think.
I love this trick. I can't wait to do it. So I've never done any barrel aging at all. Except for that I've been sitting. That's not. It's only half true. But I have a barrel that I put some Imperial Stout into. It's only a 5-gallon barrel from Kings County Distilling. And some fun stuff. But I've actually been sitting on that for like a year and 3 months. Like way long. Like,
yeah.
Really too long. So it's going to be really strong. It was fresh. Like it had only been emptied like 3 days before I put it in, and I've just been waiting to basically I have to brew another beer to blend it with, of course, you know.
Yeah, that's going to be a doozy. I've had a couple beers that have been in those barrels, and they're hot. But it's a good thing, because if you brew the right thing, you can blend into it and really come out with something great. So you have the base. The base barrel, you know. So
what other? So do you have any other special projects or stuff coming up?
We're very excited this week. We're going to have what I believe is the first beer that's been brewed and canned on Long Island. So we're canning our Party Boat IPA. And so we're using a mobile canner for that. So the mobile canner comes in, fills the cans, and then they leave, and we're left with a bunch of cans. So it should be good. We're pretty excited about that because we haven't had a 12-ounce package at all, and so it just really opens up the door to a whole nother, you know, a whole plethora of beer drinkers that don't do growlers or large format bottles, so
right.
or draft. You know, there's a lot of guys and girls that. They might have children or they might not be interested in going out to bars and trying local beers in draft format. So when you have it in a can and they can take it anywhere,
yeah.
it's very advantageous for those types of folks. So.
Well, anywhere like Long Island that has a lot of outdoor activities that people can take, you know, might not be able to take glass bottles,
right.
but can take cans. It's
right. And that was, you know, we're obviously here in a boating community. So that was one of the main reasons why we wanted to go with cans. And then Light Strike, and, you know, it's just really, it's to some ways a superior package to a bottle. I know people would argue that back and forth. I still like bottled beer. I'm not
right.
dissing bottles. But yeah, it's the mobility of it. And then, you know, you can put it in a cooler. You can bring it on a boat. You can bring it to the beach. You don't have to worry about glass breakage and things like that.
And why did you choose your IPA for that?
The IPA really... I don't know. It's a very good seller for us. It probably we volume wise probably move more of that than anything else. Schooner is used to be the front runner and now is like a close second. Schooner is going to be the next one out. So yeah, it was just I thought the IPA would work first for a can. People are used to seeing some IPAs in a can already, so that was kind of the way to do it.
To that end, where can we see your beers? How wide is your distribution?
I currently have a distributor in New York City. So they go really through four of the boroughs. We don't spend a lot of time in Staten Island. Not that we don't like Staten Island. We just haven't really gotten there yet. Pretty much the city, Westchester County, we do a little bit of distribution in and then throughout the island. But that's really it. For the immediate, we're going to stay in those locations probably for like the next year.
Yeah,
I don't see us moving to other states and things
like
that.
You have a humble house here.
Maybe. Yeah, that's right. Where would we make the beer to do that? You know, that's a whole other project altogether. Is what are we going to do when we outgrow this place and we're kind of outgrowing it now? I don't think we'd ever leave this particular facility just because, as you know, the tasting room gets bumping because it's right down here and the water's right there, so. And I don't feel like moving all this stuff, so eventually we may find another spot where we can
an annex
would be an excellent word. So where we can brew probably some larger batches and fill demand, but also keep this. I mean, the nice part about this system is it's 7 barrels, so you know 250 gallons seems like a lot, but it's really not. You know, you're talking about 14 kegs per brew. And it's fairly, you know, you can experiment and get rid of it pretty quick if you need to. So so it's nice to have the smaller system.
And what are your flagships what are your seasonals like, or what are your experimental beers? How often are you changing things up on that side?
Well, now that we're into the summer, we're pretty much, we're backed into a corner where we have to do the regular beers.
Right.
So. You know, we're making Schooner, we're making Porter, Party Boat, Wit, and the Triple are our focuses.
Those are our five year round
gotcha. Most popular beers. You know, right before the summer rush started, we were every couple weeks doing something a little bit different. So I think to some degree, bar owners, restaurant owners, and our drinking fan base, if that's what you want to call them, they're used to and expect us to do something new and different.
Right.
And some of them stick. So the problem is when we get too many of them that wow, that was good. It's like, damn it. Well, we don't have space for that. We'll do that again in like another 3 months, 4 months. So we've taken some of the regular beers that we used to do and made those into kind of annual, you know, we do them once a year.
Do you talk about these on your website, and what website is that?
Yeah, there's a lot of that gab at www.portjeffbrewing.com. And then you could always go to beer menus or like a rate beer. Beer Advocate really has a lot more of our beers on there. So you can see those one-off releases that we do. And then, of course, Facebook is a good spot to see the most up-to-date information of what's going on.
Fantastic. Yeah. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Thanks for coming. I'm glad you guys finally made it.
Me too.
So, cool.
For men about it
over here. Hope you enjoyed. And if you can make it out to Port Jefferson, please do go by. It's a beautiful little town. And there's actually a homebrew store right next to Port Jeff Brewing Company, which actually Mike talked about having saved his ass a couple times.
So next week we have a weird wine episode coming on next Monday with
Damian Harris Hernandez, who makes this amazing little palm wine, pomegranate wine. And we'll talk about your finished wine. And a bunch of other weird wine stuff.
Yep. What do you do with all that great seasonal produce that we're starting to see here in New York and you've seen other places? So.
Forget about it. See you here next week. All for love campaign
like a red eye. Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.